Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. Madhya Lila, chapter 17, the Lord travels to Vrindavan. Look at Ashoka. Text 90 on the screen. Bhikshakari Mahaprabhu Kalilasayana.
Bhikshakari Mahaprabhu Kalilasayana.
Mishra Putra Ragakare Pada Sambhana. Translation by the divine grace of the Prabhupada. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took his rest after lunch, the son of Tapan Mishra, named Raghu, used to massage his legs. Text 91. Prabhu-asesana Mishra savasam sekaya. Prabhu Aila Suni Chandra Shekhara Aila.
Prabhu Aila Suni Chandra Shekhara Aila.
Okay, translation. The remnants of food left by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were taken by the whole family of Tapan Mishra. When news spread that the Lord had come, Chandra Shekhara also came to see him. Text 91. Mishra Sakha Tenho Pabha Pabha Dasa. Sorry.
Mishra Sakha Tenho Pabha Pabha Dasa.
Radya Jati Likana Viti Varsana Sivata.
Radya Jati Likana Viti
Varsana Sivata. Translation, Chandrasekhar happened to be the friend of Tapan Mishra's, and he was long known to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as his servant. He was a physician by caste, and by profession, he was a clerk. At that time, he was living in Varanasi. And see, there's a word, a name, which is a reference to the person. If everyone's name is a reference to the person. The Mishra actually means a mix, right? Does it? It means a mix. So even there, he's trained as a physician and works at the clerk. That's mix. Text 93. Asi Prabhu Pade Pade Karena Rodana. Prabhu-utti karne pa kripaya kala alingana.
Prabhu-utti karne
When, a translation, when Chandrasekhar came here, he fell down before the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and began to cry. The Lord, standing up, embraced him out of his causeless mercy. What do you think we would promote this sign? Are you curious? Yeah. Would it be affection? Yeah. I mean, that's one. Almost at any moment, whatever emotional experience she has, it's mixed. It's really mixed. Her affection is there. In fact, almost at any moment, if you can confront anyone that you know, the underlying element is affection. So there's another aspect here. And the depth of crying, to promote crying, is more than simply affection. Right? Lots of emotions piled upon one another. Section 94. Chandrasekhara Kahe Prabhu Pada Kripa Kaila. Apane Asiya Vritye Darsana Dila. It's very poetic, yeah? Very poetic. Okay, translation. Chandrasekhar said, "My dear Lord, you bestowed your causeless mercy upon me because I am your old servant. Indeed, you have come here personally to give me your audience." Now, 95, this is the moment of monumental purport. So we're going to just go through this one and go through the word for word. Okay. Apana parare vase varanasi stane.
Apana parare vase varanasi stane.
Mahabrahma sadda vina nahi sunikane.
Mahabrahma sadda vina nahi sunikane.
Now, if you wouldn't mind. Ladies, or mothers, whichever you prefer. Because sometimes a mother may not be a lady. Okay, let's proceed into the word for word. Apana parabe.
Because of my past deeds.
Rasi, staying. Varanasi, stane. In the place known as the Varanasi. Maya. Maya. Not very well defined here. What does this mean? Brahma. And Brahma. Sabda. The words. Vina. Accept. Nahi suni. I do not hear. Kane. In the ear. What an amazing coincidence. Okay. Translation was the very good says Bhakta Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Due to my past deeds, I am residing in Varanasi, but I do not hear anything but the words Maya and Brahman. Please repeat. Due to my past deeds, I am residing in Varanasi.
I am residing
But here I do not hear anything but the words Maya and Brahman. If you look at this word, someone corrected me through the chain of correction succession. We say Brahma, that's the person with four heads in this universe, Brahma, and then there's Brahma Jyoti. We stress the same A at the end. But in fact, Brahman, this Brahman effulgent, there are no diacritics in this word, no long A. It's actually Brahman. Yeah. But we normally say Brahma. It is not. Brahma is Brahma. That's a long A. That's the person A. This is Brahman. Brahman effulgence. Okay, so this is what happens when your fate takes you somewhere and you don't protest. If you're driven by your destiny, you can take a stand. Just like actually, in fact, you may be given an instruction from your spiritual master, or read something in a text of a Bhagavad Gita, for example, and see, this doesn't work for me, I don't get it. And if you say, well, I'll just go along with it, just play along with it. Like the teacher. The teacher might give you an assignment, and they mistakenly went to a different page that you're assigned to be on. If you don't raise your hand and offer a different angle of perspective to the teacher, then you're doing everyone a disservice because you're aware. So you'll see this, there's a pattern, repeated pattern in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna goes on for quite some time, and then Arjuna says, you're confusing me. I don't get it. Could you re-explain it, or could you clarify a point? This is the obligation of the submissive student. They submit their inability. Right? In the Uddhava Gita, which is the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, is also the same pattern. Uddhava, who's the brightest of the bright, a so qualified person in the one-on-one audience with Krishna himself, he doesn't get it a couple of times. And he inquires, what's happening? I don't get it. And Krishna is in fact rather astonished. He's astonished. So it's not unusual that anyone, qualified or disqualified, will be able to understand from time to time and also misunderstand. You know, Varanasi is a place of misunderstanding. If you accept your fate, then there's a purpose behind it. There's a purpose behind it. And here's the purport. And it goes on for quite some time. I should pass out papers and pens, so if you have a question in midstream, you could shoot it in my direction. Purport, my divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, the word Parabade, parenthesis, past deeds, end parenthesis, is important in this verse. I sort of pointed that out. Since Chandrasekhar was a devotee, he was always eager to hear about Krishna and his transcendental pastime. Most of the inhabitants of Benares were and are impersonalists, worshippers of Lord Shiva and followers of the Panchopasana method. Okay, so this word is unusual. See this Panchopasana, it has punch in it, five. And you may wonder, and I should probably bring in some evidence, but why bother? Just keep reading the purport. Prabhupada will clarify. The impersonalists imagine some form of the impersonal Brahman, and to facilitate the meditation, they concentrate upon the forms of, and here's five for you, here's the five, Vishnu, Shiva, Ganesh, Surya, and Goddess Durga. Okay? That's what they do. Actually, these Panchopasakas are not devotees of anyone. Here's an interesting statement for you. As it is said, which I haven't heard it before until I read this book, as it is said, to be a servant of everyone is to be a servant of no one. Actually, for a devotee, you try to be the servant of everyone who's qualified. And you serve those who are in need of your mercy or your instruction. You serve those who are your peers in a natural friendship. And you serve those who are supposedly lesser, who could be lesser than you. You serve them. You serve them. Upper, middle, and other. Serve of everyone. But this reference of service to everyone means service to no one refers to the devotional aspect. When you spread your worship across multiple personalities, then you shrug off. Actually, devotion is defined as giving everything, 100%. So that's why being a devotee of Krishna isn't very natural, because only Krishna has the capacity to accept all you've got. Yeah? He can accept and employ your shortcomings and your defects, and he comprehends and forgives all your mistakes. He really knows what's behind everything. So it's only Krishna with that scope of intelligence is capable of receiving genuine devotion. Okay, well, maybe I shouldn't be making so many comments in midstream, but what the heck? You might forget. Varanasi, or Kashi, is the chief holy place of pilgrimage for impersonalists, and it is not at all suitable for devotees. A Vaishnava likes to live in a Vishnu Tirtha, a place where Lord Vishnu's temples are present. You see the pattern? You see the pattern in writing? You're noticing, right? Yeah. Give a word that may not be fully understood, comma, definition. This is Srila Prabhupada's capacity to clarify. Right? There's the word. You might stop and wonder, what does this word mean? And then the definition follows. Patience, patience. In Varanasi, a Vaishnava likes to live in Vishnu temple, Vishnu Tirtha, a place where there are Vishnu temples are present. In Varanasi, there are many hundreds and thousands of Lord Shiva's temples, or Panchopasaka temples. Consequently, Chandrasekhar expects great unhappiness as he informed Lord Chaitanya that he was obliged to live at Banaras due to his past misdeeds. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, here it's time to flash the book, also known as Nectar of Devotion, it is also said, Durjatya arambakam papam yad asat parabhajam eva tat. Quote, according to one's past misdeeds, one takes birth on a lower platform. End quote. In the Brahma Samhita 5.54, it is said, Kamane nirdahati kintu chabakti bhajan. There is no karma attached to the past deeds or misdeeds of one in devotional service. I'll repeat that. There is no karma attached to the past deeds or misdeeds of one in devotional service. A devotee is not subjected to karma hala, the effect of fruitive activity. Karma hala is applicable to karmis, not bhaktas. Okay, yeah, the word karma hala is pretty easy breakdown, and it's already been defined, but for the sake of linguistics, karma means fruitive activity, and hala means reaction or result, what happens after. Right? You work and you get paid. Right? You steal and you get arrested. Two relative examples. Next paragraph. There are three kinds of devotees. Those who are eternally on the transcendental platform, Nitya Siddha. Those elevated to the transcendental platform by the execution of devotional service, Sadhana Siddha. And those who are neophytes advancing toward the perfectional platform, sadhaka. The sadhakas are gradually becoming free from fruitive reaction. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, also known as Nectar of Devotion, 1.17 describes the symptoms of Bhakti Yoga thus. Klesha Gini Sabda Moksha Lakhu Tukir Sudar Labha Sandra Nanda Vishesh Atma Sri Krishna Krishni Chasar. I might know it if the Nectar of Devotion had the Sanskrit in it. Fortunately, it doesn't. Devotional service is klesha gni, even for beginners. This means that it reduces or nullifies all kinds of suffering. The word sabba indicates that devotional service bestows all good fortune. And the word Krishna Akshini indicates that devotional service gradually attracts Krishna towards the devotee. Consequently, a devotee is not subject to any sinful reaction. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 66, Krishna says, Sarvadhammam paritya mam ekam saranam vaja aham pam sapabhapevyo mokshashishyami masucha. Quote, abandon all the varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reaction. Do not fear. End quote. Thus, a fully surrendered, sincere devotee immediately receives relief from all kinds of sinful reactions. There are three stages of fructification for sinful activity. At one stage, one commits the sinful act. Before that, the seed of this act exists. And before that, there is ignorance. Oh. Whereby one commits the sin. Suffering is involved in all three stages. However, Krishna is merciful to his devotee, and consequently, he immediately nullifies all three stages. In sin, the seed of sin, and the ignorance that leads one to sin. Padma Purana confirms this. Aparava palam padam papam kutam bijam palo mukham kamenaiva palieta vishnu bhakti rata manam. For further explanation of this, the Nectar of Devotion should be consulted. I've already shared it. The Nectar of Devotion was consulted. Okay, so I consulted it. And it's, when you consult, you can go to a person who's a consultant, but Srila Prabhupada has provided consultation in the form of books. And in the books, there's so much information. So just guided by the reference of the Sanskrit sightings from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, I went to the very beginning, because it says 1.1.17, up above the illness, so 1.1.17. So there, on page 5, and you can do your homework if you want, get your copy of Nectar of Devotion out, and look, page 5, 6, and 7, there's explanation. And it's not in the same order as we just read it here. I suppose I should punctuate this part with some prayers. Om agena tamaranga shakana agena sakara chakramaya tanyana tasmasi giravaya nama shri chaitanya manavisham stapitam inabitale sayamrutadamana dadatishta pandatkam vandaham shri guru shri yutaparam kamalam shri gurinapasimcha shri gupam saradatam sahagana vaitatam tam sativam sadvaitam savajitam bharajana sahayatam krishna chaitanya devam shri radha krishna padam sahagana vaitatam sivasam. Panchakalpatuta sa kripasindaveva chapatita namba vanadeva namo namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shri Vasudeva Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Turns out that due to identity with the matter, then one is prone to sin. That's the pattern. That's I call it a paraphrased version of what is given in the Nectar of Devotion. That means that because of false ego, which is just about the first layer that's applied in the explanation of how the elements are created by Lord Brahma, it starts with giving everyone blanket ignorance in the form of false ego. Here is matter, identify with it. And we do. I mean, what are we working with? We're working with matter. But it becomes purified as soon as one engages in Krishna bhakti. As soon as one bows down or says Krishna's name, then the identity begins to shift. It begins to shift. And we embrace eternal identity. With that, ignorance is shaken out. And with ignorance, only in the dark are you going to fall. If your eyes are open and you're moving in an illuminated environment, then the chances of making a mistake are minimized, right? Of course, we're also equipped with that which is cursed by the gopis, and that is blinking. We're blinking. So that means, whether you notice it or not, you're in the dark half the time. This is material conditioning, is blinking. Right? The British use this in a placement of a curse. Instead of cussing, they use the word blinking, blinking. Instead of saying hell, which you're not supposed to say in this form, you can say blazes, right? But it actually means hell, right? So we're blinking means we're off and on in the mode of ignorance, right? And then because of the weight of this fleshy form and the tedium that we experience with our psyche, we need to take a break. And when we take a break, it's called sleep. And sleep, you're out of it. No one expects very much from you when you're sleeping. Right? If a person is sleeping, it's better to leave them alone. Right? They say that about dogs, but human beings are even worse sometimes. Don't wake up a person, abruptly. There's a Vedic version. There's a Vedic version of waking. When the king is awakened, he has a chorus of praisers. They come into his chamber and they start singing his glories. And then he wakes to, okay, I'm accepted in the world. And this is my definition. The glories include your employment. It's like job description. Okay. Oh, okay. I'm back. Otherwise, I have a friend, quite a famous friend, and he told me several times he would wake up and be wondering who he is. And then he starts to piece it together. Okay, I'm this, and I do this. They would come back to him. They would come back to him. And then he, okay, now I'm prepared to open my eyes. And that's an identity factor. It's an identity factor. So the first equipment that's provided for you is a covering of false ego. Identify with matter. Already you've got a mask on. No one knows who you are. And you look in the mirror and you don't know who you are. You're accepting this mask as who you are. And then this mask is shaped in a certain way due to your past deeds, past misdeeds. You become equipped. The modes of maternity equip you with a maternal form. And then eventually the maternal form has care over children. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. How is it? How it works? It's so fantastic, right? And for another person, they have incredible virility. And then they're just waiting for a moment when they can display it to the world. They're equipped this way. And so dutifully utilized in service to Krishna, everything becomes purified and one's eternal identity becomes clarified. But otherwise, without this light of transcendental understanding, and I should stop here a moment, and I had this realization that it was one of the speakers was saying spiritual, hesitant, and then transcendental. And I said, well, they're not synonyms. I said to myself, I took a note. I said, oh, yes, this is quite interesting because we often use spiritual and transcendental, but transcendental, the essence of this word is like transportation and trans. There's a lot of trans words. It means in the process. So you're going somewhere, then you use transport and then transfer, or these other words, is it in the process of from matter to spirit. And then transcendental means above matter. But it doesn't mean completely free from matter, it's just on the way. Whereas spiritual is a factual experience of above. So you use spiritual tools to transcend matter. And that all the spiritual tools, where are my tools? I didn't bring my toolkits. It's in my car. Now the tools of elevation are one's attitude and conviction, faith, and their willingness to employ their God-given skills in praise of the Supreme Person. That's, in a shorter term, devotional service. Devotional service. Your attitude of devotion, as opposed to doing service. Yeah, I do service all day. And still I'm miserable. Well, what? That's some obstacle is in your mind that says, I'm doing service, I'm working. So I'm engaging, yeah? Doing service as opposed to rendering. Yeah? I mean, I don't mean to cast aspersions against American English, but do doesn't work for you. Do it means not do it. And this boy, just yesterday, I was in the class trying to teach some kids art, right? Trying. What am I teaching? It's not, it's just let them explore in a way, right? But he said, I have to do this. And I said, well, that sounds burdensome, doesn't it? But if you have something in your hand, that's your possession. If someone gave it to you, hide it. I have an opportunity to perform devotional service. So also connected with the art world. And the art world, if you make a drawing, there's levels of drawing. One is a sketch, right? Another is a gesture, just nothing. Another is something that you would plan to use for some other purpose, reference. But when you make a rendering, the word rendering means a finished product, right down to the finest detail. And as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on the Uddhava Gita, he says that devotees are meticulous in the application of the devotional service. That they engage in devotional service meticulously. And that means right down to the finest detail. In other words, do it as quick as possible and go on with your other aspects of your life. But there's no other aspect of your life. There's one fantastic gemstone that has many, many facets to it and many, many functions. All right? So you can engage today. There's a full day of opportunity. Right? There's a maha cleaning here, and then you can go and get on someone's vehicle and drive all the way 2 hours to meet a resistant crowd. You know, but there's an opportunity to hear, chant, and engage in service. It's there, right? But what is the difference between just serving and performing devotional service is identity. As a devotee, and you can say, well, I'm such a fallen devotee, I have no devotion, right? Well, that's true. At least in my case, when I say it, it's true. Completely true. Yeah? But trying to slow it down a little bit, my goal with anything is the end. I just want to finish. But then what am I going to do? I saved so much time, and then I have a chance to waste my own time. But this meticulous aspect, okay, that we're bartering with a conditioned identity and a conditioned mind, a conditioned intelligence. We're bartering back and forth, back and forth. Eventually, you have to settle. After negotiation, then you buy into it. You go back and forth. But then you put your money where your mouth is. In other words, put your body, mind, intelligence, right into the substance of the philosophy. And then, okay, now I'm an intellectual. No. Body, physical body, mind, which is wayward by nature, material nature, invested completely, right? Like, sort of like gambling, okay? Just throw it all in, and right, okay? People are, they're crazy enough to lose so much money on gambling, and you just get crazy, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and just put it all on Krishna. And what happens is Krishna loves you, and Krishna cares for you, and he is the supreme provider, and the supreme maintainer, and he's all these supreme things. He's so supreme. And then we don't have trust in him. Well, maybe a little, yeah. But when he takes over, reading between the lines of Bhagavad Gita, the real essence is turning your existence over to the will of Krishna. Then devotional service, 10%, 100%. 10% means 100%, right? 100%. But then there's Maya. And of course, here we are back in Varanasi, talking about Maya. But Maya is there, and Maya is Krishna's servant. So if you talk about Maya as your opponent, it's very good. You should recognize there's actually a war going on against illusion. Illusion. I mentioned this before, that there's the whole background of illusion. Everything that you survey belongs to you. It's accessible. Okay, it's accessible. But is it connected to Krishna? And no, of course not. I have rusting machines in my backyard. Yeah, but it is connected to Krishna. Krishna made every element, right? And then all your thoughts and recognition, they're actually connected to Krishna. It's peculiarity, but the pure devotee sees everyone as a devotee, except himself. It's peculiarity. And then the neophyte devotee sees no one as a devotee, except himself. Kind of a contrast, isn't it? It's kind of a contrast, right? And then in between we see, oh, some people are devotees and some people aren't. Some devotees are way out there, And then, how can we come to even distribution of Krishna's love, right? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was shown. He was shown. So much is going on here. We'll look to this personality and we'll go back to why he cried. Why he's crying. Yeah, crying out of humility. He's crying out of separation. He's crying out of remorse. He's crying out of realization. He's crying out of someone giving him the most precious gift. And when someone gives you a gift, like a nice example, real simple example, is that a child invests in making art. I mean, I see it all the time, but making art. Here's a story about Srila Prabhupada. He was flying from one place to another and he pulled out his beads and they had a picture of Krishna. And he pinned it on the seat in front of him, and he was chanting, really happily looking at this picture, right? This picture was drawn by, like, a first-grade student. It really didn't look very much like, a circle with a line, and it was blue, right? It had eyes. Okay, but Krishna, Prabhupada was meditating with such affection, and this prizing the picture, right? And when someone gives you something that has their heart invested in it, it will bring you to tears. Because of the sentiment. It's not love and affection. captured and given to you is enough to knock you over. Right? Because we're so bereft of it most of the time. When someone comes, and that's the effect of our preaching. It's sharing Krishna's affection, Krishna's capacity to be friendly to everyone. Provision of time, place, and circumstance. Here's the time. Hey, you meet a Maya buddy. No, I'm waiting. No, Krishna, if Krishna wanted me to become a devotee, then I'd become a devotee. Here's the opportunity right in front of you. I'm the opportunity for you to become a devotee. Right? And you resist with affection. Right? You show the person. Right? Yes, there is a supreme person, and I'm part and parcel of him, and so are you. You shatter their misunderstanding. Shatter it. Right? Out of affection. Okay, well, last year I went to this monster car, and I mean, it was really, really, it was raining, we were underneath the overpass, it was really quite amazing. And I went, what are we doing here? And these people are walking by, and they're all completely salt of the earth people, salt, really salt of the earth, right? And they have, their fashions are the current trend among the salt of the earth. It's like, really astonishing. And offering them books, and no, they just can't. It's against their religion to take another religion's book, right? And then they're coming with their children, and they've got children, lots of children. And then they have those, like the kind we have back here sometimes. Remember that there was an argument in this room. I've been meaning to share this joke with you. It's kind of a rude joke, but you know, what do you expect from a person like me? There's a sign over here requesting a reduction of sound impact in the room, right? It's an official sign. I doctored it last week. I put it in a new frame. Because it gets thrown down. And then the other side, behind Prabhupada, was a box of 100 earplugs. Well, 200, because there's 100 pair, right? And three of these gunshot earmarks, right? And there was no words on it, but I made up what would go with it. It was just, if you don't like it, stick it in your ear. That's not Vaishnava etiquette to me. I mean, it sounds a little rude, I mean, but that's the joke I come up with. It's not really a joke. It's just how you respond. You don't like it so loud. Stuff it in your ear, man. Just go outside. Right? That's not. It doesn't feel like Krishna to me. You know? What would Krishna say? Maybe this energy in the room is better employed for broadcasting Krishna to the world. If we have it all contained in here, it's like concentrated juice, something, you know, one little can and it makes 10 gallons, right? We spread it out. Spread it out. There's no problem with volume when you're outside. You know, that's the Midanga. They say that the sound covers 1 mile. We're in a, you know, this confines, and there's 3 or 4 drums simultaneously. So how many miles is that? There's a lot of miles, right? Any larger space? I don't know. And you'll see also in India, the structure of what they call kirtan halls, it's an open space, open. No ceiling and pillars on the side, right? And the sound carries. Also, if you have the privilege of witnessing singers, don't have to employ them to lead the kirtan. Especially in Bengal, they're so powerful. Their voices are so powerful. Right? Even though I'm hard of hearing, when I speak with the Bengal, I can almost always understand what they're saying. They speak very loud. And when they sing, really sing, they really sing. Right? They know how to let their life airs fill the room instead. Right? Like an opera singer. Right? Opera singer. Right? It's not, the opera singer is not dependent on the shell of the stage. They just project, and the people way in the balcony, they can hear. Right? And that's when your loving devotion becomes important. Okay. I had a thought, and I want to share it with you in the last 5 minutes, just a shot. I was thinking about sin. Because I think about sin all the time, actually. To tell you the truth, there's nothing on my mind besides sin. Looking for the opportunity to sin. But Krishna's removed a lot of the opportunities and he's minimized my capacity to sin, and then he engages me in lots of busy work so that I don't have time for sin. Right? But I thought on a grander scale. The grand scale of sin is payoff and payback. I've said this before here. Payoff and payback, right? So someone does something wrong to me, and then I'm going to get back to them. They made a mistake. They sinned. Right? And if I don't exercise forgiveness and liberality and the law, because the law is there, the law can take care of it, or let Krishna do his work, because Krishna is really good at weaving your sinful reactions back at you. Right? So even a grander scale, even on a grander scale, if simply letting the people go to hell, that's what we're doing, letting people go to hell and not caring. If we apply what has been coming up in the Bhagavatam classes, that elevate people's consciousness, elevate, introduce goodness. In other words, turn the light on. Tamas is a mode of darkness. In the dark, you make mistakes, you sin. If there was no desire to pay people back for their sinful reactions, simply blessing them as much as possible, but blessing them with instruction, how to purify their existence, then what happens is they become engaged in something redeeming, and Krishna takes over, and the seed of sinful desire is vanquished. There are three sightings when Srila Prabhupada opens up this part of the teaching. He talks, one example is a person who is like habitually sexually inclined, and because they can't restrain themselves, then they contract what now they call, what is it, STD or something like that? Sounds like a floral delivery program. Venereal disease. Actually, the word venereal relates to Vishnu. I mean, not Vishnu. Vesuvius, what is it? Venus. Yeah, the second planet before you get here. All right. So Venus means that, and then this is the Venus mound in people's hands. People who are that can't restrain themselves get sinful reaction in the form of disease. And they have to really restrict their activities for a very long time. They take lots of medicine, and they suffer like anything. Syphilis and all these other sexually contracted diseases, they're very severe and painful. And it takes a lot of work for the physician and the patient to come to health once again. But it doesn't vanquish the desire. And this is the point that Srila Prabhupada makes, is that unless the essential desire is removed, or not just removed, replaced, that's experiencing a higher taste, that's verse from Bhagavad Gita, experiencing a higher taste. The second example that Srila Prabhupada uses is the one that from the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, talking about Ajamil, but prior to the story of Ajamil is that bathing of an elephant. Most of you know this. An elephant bathes and gets all washed up really beautifully, and then goes out onto the bank and throws dust. But technically, according to zoology, the elephant has, although it's known as a pachyderm, thick skin, it's actually very delicate. And it uses dirt, dust, as a bathing powder. It protects their skin. But the example is still valid. You wash up and then you roll in the dirt. This is what I was brought up in Catholicism. So Saturday you go to church and you go into the little cell and you bless yourself and you get someone to give you penance and you do penance. And that means you say some prayers and you ask God to forgive you. And then you go to Mass on Sunday and then they put a piece of paper thin bread in your mouth. And then you're blessed, like totally blessed, and you're purified, and then you go out and start sinning again. By Sunday afternoon, you've already listed a few more that you can confess on Saturday. Right? So, hey, that's very good for business, church business. It works very well. Right? Say it. That doesn't work. That's just bathing of an elephant. Stand, and then it goes on very beautifully. I would urge you to read pages 5, 6, and 7 of the Nectar of Devotion when you have a chance. It's very edifying. The point is, if we can intercept the sinning desire by providing an alternative to invest one's energy. This is what devotional service is. Engage others in devotional service is an excellent way to engage yourself, because engaging others takes so much more time. You know, someone comes and says, can I help you? They say, well, actually, I don't have time. It's so much more work to have someone help you, sometimes. But it's required. This is the real sacrifice, giving people time and giving people your attention, right? And giving people your understanding. These are sacrifice, charity, and penance, all wrapped up in one. And that's why the purpose of having these classes is to remind those who are in the process to share the process with others. Well, thanks so much for your extended attention. I didn't mean to put you to sleep or bore you in any way. If you have any comment, correction, criticism, or a question, you can address me independently. That will work for both of us. Or if you're online and you'd like to give me the business by telecommunications, my email address is misterdas, all lowercase, @gmail.com.